It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Good afternoon, and welcome to Caregiver Speak, the first online support group for caregivers by caregivers. I'm Marjorie Pabst, the host and author of Words of Care, my most recent book on caregiving. You can access my information at mycaregivingcoach.com or on the website ecarediary.com, the sponsor of this show. The purpose of our show is to provide tools and tips for the busy caregiver. Today, I am so pleased to welcome Dr. Diane Meyer back to the show and our caregiver panel. They will be shedding light on what palliative care is and what it means for you, for the busy caregiver, for patients, for their families, and their communities. Dr. Diane Meyer is the CEO of the Center to Advance Palliative Care, otherwise known as CAPC. We'll get more information at the end of the show on how you can access that information even more. This is a national organization devoted to increasing the number and the quality of palliative care programs in the United States. Under Dr. Meyer's leadership, the number of palliative care programs in the United States and in U.S. hospitals has more than tripled in the last 10 years. Quite an achievement. She is also the Vice Chair for Public Policy and Professor of Geriatrics and Palliative Medicine and the Goldsman Professor of Medical Ethics at the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai in New York City. In 2009 and 10, she was the Health and Aging Fellow in Washington, D.C., and among her many, many awards is the prestigious MacArthur Foundation Genius Award Fellowship. Dr. Meyer is indeed a pioneer in bringing palliative care into mainstream medicine. Dr. Meyer is joined today by Mary and Sue, members of our caregiver panel, and I am so delighted that all three of you are with me today. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Meyer, let's begin first by your explaining the differences between hospice care and palliative care.
Well, hospice care is a form of palliative care that is restricted only to those that are predictably dying. Palliative care is a new field that focuses on improving the quality of life of people who are living with a long-term serious illness, as well as for their families, by addressing the pain, symptoms and stress of a serious illness as an added layer of support. So palliative care teams, and we are a team, work alongside the patient's regular medical team, as well as with the really important people on their team, their family caregivers, to find out what matters most to patients and families, and then to help build a care plan and honor that care plan that achieves the priorities that the patient and family say are their top priorities. So, for example, very often we hear from patients and families that they don't ever want to have to go back to the hospital again, but they keep having to go back because they don't have the support they need at home. So we will work very hard on mobilizing the needed community support so that an older person and his or her spouse can remain in their home and not keep bouncing in and out of the emergency room and the hospital.
Yeah. And, you know, the last time you were on the show, I think back in the spring, you gave us a couple of specific examples of people who have been helped. And since then, Dr. Meyer, maybe because you raised that awareness in my mind, but I have talked to numbers of people who are just so distressed by having to take their loved one back to the hospital. And so palliative care is clearly a way to, as you say, plan and to keep that loved one in the home. So thank you. So today, listeners, we're going to be asking a number of questions of Dr. Meyer, and mainly Sue and Mary are going to be asking the questions. So, Sue, why don't you start a question from you for Dr. Meyer?
Well, palliative care is kind of a new word to all of us, and is this something that's prescribed by a doctor? Who decides on palliative care?
Well, that's a really good question, and I have to tell you that when you say palliative care is kind of a new concept for us, unfortunately, it's also a new concept for most doctors. Doctors who were trained more than 10 years ago have never had any exposure to palliative care, are not familiar with what it can do to help patients and families, and tend not to make the referral. That's one of the reasons I spend so much time talking with members of the public and caregivers especially like yourselves, because you have to advocate for yourself and you have to advocate for your loved one by demanding this kind of care. And the reason you should demand it is that it is the best care. We now have a number of studies that show that people with serious illness who receive palliative care at the same time as their regular medical care live longer, spend much less time in the hospital and the emergency room because they don't have emergencies and crises because they're prevented. They have lower pain and other symptom distress. They are less likely to be depressed. And in addition to the patient's outcomes being better, there's also now good science showing that family caregivers also do better because of that added layer of support. So if you're not getting palliative care, you are getting inferior care if your loved one has a serious progressive illness. And you need to demand it. The health system is not very responsive. It's not very, it doesn't change rapidly. But if you're an informed consumer advocating for yourself and for your loved one and say, you know, I've read about palliative care and I know that it helps patients like my loved one and it helps family caregivers like me, and I'm going to go find it if you can't provide it. And so I guess I'm encouraging the poor, overwhelmed, exhausted family caregiver who already has enough to do to add one more thing to the list, which is to make sure that you have access to a palliative care team that can help you negotiate the future so you know what to expect and can handle whatever comes.
Great. Sue, any follow-up to that answer?
Well, the obvious question is, how much does it cost and who pays for it? Is it covered by insurance?
Yeah.
The cost factor is always a question.
Of course, and cost is a terrible burden in the United States for healthcare. It's covered by insurance the same way as any medical visit is covered by insurance. So, for example, if you have insurance that covers 80% of your usual charges and you have to pay the other 20%, the same would be true in palliative care. If you have Medicare and it covers essentially all the costs of a physician visit, whether you're seeing your GP or your cardiologist or your oncologist, palliative care is reimbursed exactly the same way because it's delivered by board-certified physicians just the way your other doctors are.
Okay. Mary, how about you?
My question is, with the palliative care, does it mean stopping all treatments like chemo similar to hospice? Oh. I'm thinking of my brother, and he was under hospice, and they just stopped everything except for the morphine at the end.
Hospice is, as I said earlier, palliative care that under Medicare law can only be given to people who are predictably dying.
Mm-hmm.
Doctors look at them and say, this person's likely to die.
Right, right. That's why I was wondering with the palliative care, though.
Palliative care is for anybody, whether they're going to be cured. So as an example, we often take care of young people in their 20s,
mm-hmm.
like leukemia or lymphoma, that are very likely to be cured with a bone marrow transplant, but have a very intense symptom burden. Not only is the disease cause a lot of pain and shortness of breath and fatigue, the treatment is pretty brutal as well. So we provide palliative care alongside the oncology care that patient gets to help them get through this.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Possible. And then the majority of our patients are chronically ill. That is, they are not going to be cured, but they are going to live with whatever they have for many, many years, like emphysema, like dementia, like heart disease, and like many cancers. Cancer is now a chronic disease for many people. People can live for quite a long time with cancer, and the goal of palliative care is to help people with a chronic disease like that live as well as they can during that extra time that they've been given, and to achieve the things that matter most to them and think about how they want to spend their time. Do they want to spend it going back and forth to emergency rooms and hospitals? Most people don't. So it's really about making that added time worth having. It's adding quality to the quantity.
Yep. Dr. Meyer, this is Marjorie. When you mentioned earlier on with regard to planning, and this allows a family to decide for themselves and the caregivers, you know, at home, what they want for themselves, that really struck home to me as being an incredible advantage of palliative care. To your point, my mother was in and out of the hospital having radiation. She really didn't want it, but we were uninformed consumers, and so we went ahead and did it. And I look back and I think, well, if she'd had palliative care, that person would have facilitated our thinking about a family plan, what was really best for her, rather than just advice that was coming from a doctor.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, in the doctor's defense, I have to say, we never got any training in medical school or residency or specialty training to think about what patients and families might need other than, if it's cancer, chemotherapy or radiation.
Yes.
I mean, it is a problem of medical education or lack of medical education. If doctors got the training to know how to have a conversation, to sit down with the patient and the family and take the time to ask questions like, how are you holding up? And can you talk to me about what matters most to you? And then just listen. People will tell you. People will always tell you what their inner experience of living with this illness and its treatment has been like, and they will also tell you what's most important to them. Yeah. And that then becomes the guide for developing the medical treatment plan to achieve the goals that matter most to patients and families. And as I said, very often it's, how can I stay home? How can I not have? How can I stop having one pain crisis after another? How can I get help to bathe my loved one, to dress my loved one, to feed my loved one? You know, how can I get help so I can go out once in a while? Those are the things that are on people's minds. They just don't bring them up with doctors because doctors don't ask.
Yeah.
How often and how much time does a palliative caregiver, are they licensed practitioners?
Yeah, they're MDs and nurse,
okay.
And nurse practitioners and social workers and sometimes chaplains. And some of us also have really important additional members of the team. So, for example, at Mount Sinai in New York City, we have a whole team of massage therapists. We have an art and music therapist. We have someone who does therapeutic yoga and breathing with our patients. And they add a huge amount of value to what we provide. But most of the team are, you know, very well-trained and board-certified medical and nursing professionals.
Within that training, do you also train the caregiver?
Well, that's, I think the thing about palliative care that distinguishes it from much of the rest of medicine is that we always think about the patient and their family as our unit of care. It's more like pediatrics in that way. We recognize that the family is the linchpin for the patient, that if the family is not supported, if the family doesn't know what to expect, if the family doesn't know what to do, if the pain starts escalating, if the family isn't getting any sleep, that patient is not going to do well. That patient's going to end up in the ER over and over and over again. So we recognize that the families are holding the bag and they need help. They desperately need help and support and guidance. They need training. They need to know what to expect, and they need to have a 24/7 phone number that they can call at any time. There's a problem, or they're worried about something, or some unexpected thing happens, and get expert advice over the phone. And in most parts of the country, that's just nowhere to be found. Yet it's so obvious that that's what patients and their families need. So,
Dr.
That's
Meyer, how would you find a palliative care provider if, say, I took care of my husband at home, and, you know, you get to the point where you know you need help? I called hospice, but if I had, and this is back 3 years ago before I even heard of palliative care, how would you find a provider?
Well, so most patients with chronic and serious illness are not hospice eligible because they're not dying in a predictable way. They're living with chronic disease. So hospice is great if it's pretty clear to you that your loved one is dying. That's the best care you can get when someone is in those very late stages of disease because it provides a huge amount of support at home. But if your loved one may be with us for quite a while, years perhaps, then you need to look for palliative care. And the way to find a palliative care team or service in your area is to go to a website, which I'll tell you, I'll spell it for you. It's all one word, getpalliativecare.org. So getpalliativecare, getpalliativecare, one word, .org. And on that website are both stories of patients and families who got palliative care and benefited from it. There's some frequently asked questions like, is palliative care right for me and how will I know? But very importantly, there's a directory of programs. So there's a program director, you type in the name of your city or your zip code, and all the teams in your town will come up on a drop-down menu with contact information. So we built that website so that patients and families could look out for themselves and not wait for doctors who may have been trained 30 years ago and are never going to think of it to connect them to a palliative care team. Most hospitals in the U.S. have palliative care teams, and they're increasingly available in outpatient settings, clinics, doctor's offices, nursing homes, home care agencies, et cetera. But you have to look in your particular neighborhood and region.
Great. This is all amazing information. Mary or Sue, another question?
Well, one of the things, and again, I'm going back to the training, the firemen, you know, the 911 emergency people were very, very good about coming and helping, but I couldn't have them 24/7. And my husband was 6 foot tall and weighed 170 pounds, and I'm not. And so rolling him in the bed, luckily I had been trained as a youngster to help roll a patient over and change the sheets and that. But getting him in and out of bed was a two-person situation, and, you know, you don't want to injure yourself or the person you're caring for by doing something inappropriate.
Yeah.
So that was my question about the training.
Absolutely. So palliative care teams work alongside many other teams. So, for example, under Medicare, there are home care agencies that can come in for a short period of time to help, and those nurses in those home care agencies do provide a lot of family caregiver training on things like, for example, administering injections, doing wound care, safe transfers, helping someone safely get from bed to chair, chair to toilet, chair to shower, and back again. But palliative care teams do the same, which is, again, it's so important for families to know what the future holds, what to expect, and what to do when certain very predictable problems arise, like a pain crisis, for example, or confusion or agitation or shortness of breath or constipation. These are all things that happen almost universally in people with serious and chronic illnesses, but families get no guidance in what to do when that happens. palliative care teams make sure you have the tools and the knowledge you need to be able to help your loved one when one of those things occurs.
Yeah. It sounds, Dr. Meyer, as though most people do not transition out of palliative care. Is that a correct assumption?
Well, most people, that would be correct. Remember I mentioned about some of the younger people we take care of who curable disease. So there are some middle-aged and older people who also get things like heart transplants or liver transplants or lung transplants and go from being really, really sick and at high risk of dying to basically normal after a transplant. And in situations like that, we make sure the patient and the family have our phone number, but we no longer provide direct service because the patient doesn't need it.
Yeah.
So there are situations when one of our miracle interventions applies and really helps someone. And then, you know, we say, goodbye, call us if you need us. The majority, though, don't get cured, don't get, you know, sort of a miracle intervention that takes the disease away, but live with that disease for a long time. And we make sure that people have our 24/7 phone number, access to help whenever they need it.
Yeah. Caregivers, other questions?
If the you had a medical team of doctors and nurses, PAs, et cetera, is there like a team leader in this? I know with like hospice care, there was a team leader who that was your person to go to, and then they would contact the others. Or
yeah, there usually is, and the team leader often depends on the needs of the patient and the family. So much of the time it's a doctor who's the team leader because some of the patients we see are quite complicated, have multiple chronic conditions, like they don't just have cancer. They have cancer plus dementia, plus heart
plus
emphysema. So the medical complexity is very high, and in situations like that, you definitely need a doctor.
But you don't have to change your doctors. No. That's just the doctor in charge of the team for the palliative care, not for the other problems that are going on.
No, but that doctor is the primary contact with your other doctors.
Uh-huh. Okay.
For example, if I were the doctor on the palliative care team and you came to me and said your loved one, in spite of treatment of his or her heart failure and emphysema, was still getting incredibly short of breath just walking across the room, I would probably pick up the phone and call your cardiologist and talk it over with him. What could we do to improve your quality of life and reduce that sensation of not being able to get any air, which is a horrible feeling,
and yes,
be treated. But it's not the sort of thing where I would tell you, go ask your cardiologist for something. I would pick up the phone and speak to the cardiologist and, you know, explain what I would recommend and why. And that usually works better for patients and families to have a doctor-to-doctor conversation.
I could see that being easier on the caregiver, too.
Yeah, because it just takes some of that burden of, please pay attention to me, off the caregiver. And doctors always respond to calls from other doctors.
Exactly.
Well, I'm sure
that's the hardest problem today with the phone systems getting through when you need it.
Exactly, especially if it's after 5 o'clock.
Exactly.
I'm sure there's a difference with the conversation because your language, while I have a lot of medical terms in my lexicology, doctors relate better to questions in medical ease.
Yeah, in jargon. Absolutely. And also, a doctor calling a doctor tends to have perhaps an understanding of the complexity of the pros and cons, the benefits and burdens of the different things the primary doc has been trying, and understands how difficult the challenges that he or she is facing and can kind of come alongside that primary doctor and say, you know, this is really a challenging patient. You know, and make that doctor feel recognized and appreciated for the work he or she has been doing, and then offer a little added layer of expertise on, for example, the treatment of shortness of breath that most practicing physicians today never got any training in how to do.
Yeah.
There again, you mentioned the respect from doctor to doctor. Do you find any reluctance from doctors to, in essence, give up some of their, for lack of a better word, control of a patient's care?
That's a very good word, control. And yes, we do find that. And it is primarily among physicians of my age group, people in their 40s, 50s, and 60s, who never had any training or exposure to palliative care when they were learning, and who see it as, wrongly, as the same thing as hospice. So many doctors do not understand what I just explained to you, which is that hospice is limited to the dying, but palliative care is for anyone who needs it. And it doesn't matter how long they're going to live or whether they're going to be cured. And doctors need to be educated about that. And unfortunately, sometimes that educational role is going to sit right on your shoulders with a family caregiver saying, I've been reading about this. I see the information. This will help me and my loved one feel better, do better, get the help we need, and I'm pursuing it, not asking permission, just doing it. That doctor will see that, first of all, you're an effective caregiver and advocate. Secondly, he or she will see how much better you're both doing. We'll get a lot fewer emergency after-hours phone calls from you, and we'll slowly learn that this is a resource that he or she should be using to help patients and families get the best care possible. But unfortunately, that educational role does sit squarely on the shoulders of patients and families, because doctors who are in practice right now don't go back to school. We don't have access to them. So they may have to learn it from you. The younger physicians, ones who's trained, say, in the last 15 years or so, those in their 30s, early 40s, all trained in a teaching hospital that had palliative care teams and are much, much more comfortable collaborating and partnering with a palliative care team. So, you know, when I take the long view, I think to myself, well, we're just going to have to wait for doctors in my generation to retire or die to make this better. But what I'm hoping is that public demand from patients and families will start to change their behavior.
Absolutely.
Believe it or not, we do listen to you.
Yes. Well, and there aren't there a number of, should we say, mechanisms, evaluation systems that are coming into hospitals that encourage hospitals, if not really hold their feet to the fire, to be more patient-centered?
Yes, there are a number of new initiatives that are actually a consequence of the health reform legislation that force hospitals to pay attention to the experience of patients and families in a way that hospitals were never forced to do so in the past. So, for example, if hospitals discharge a patient without knowing if that home setting is safe, without knowing if they have access to transportation, without knowing if they read English, without knowing if they understand the purposes and side effects of all their medicines, and that person bounces back to the ER 4 days later because none of those things were in place, in the past, the hospital just made more money on each hospital admission, and there was no incentive for that hospital to put resources, time, and money into making sure that that discharge plan was safe. Now hospitals are going to be penalized very significantly, like large amounts of dollars, if more patients come back within 30 days than should after a discharge. So all of a sudden, hospitals are paying much more attention to the needs of patients and families in their communities. Because if they don't, and the patient and family end up back in the ER, the hospital will be will face a significant penalty for that.
Yeah.
So I think it is much more attention.
Great. I'm going to have to intervene. Believe it or not, we are right close to the end of our show. And Dr. Meyer, I'd like for you to give that information again. It's called Get Care, Get Palliative Care.
GetPalliativeCare.org. So GetPalliativeCare, all one word, GetPalliativeCare.org. And lots of really good information is there.
Thank you so much. And we hope you'll come on the show again. You know, we got such wonderful response to our last show. Came on again. We appreciate it so much. This is incredibly important information. And so thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you to Mary and Sue for helping us really get out those issues that are most important to caregivers. So thank you all for coming on the show today.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Take care, everyone. Tune in again if it's Tuesday at 2 o'clock Eastern Time. It's Empowering Family Caregivers. Thanks again. This is Marjorie Pabst. Have a great day. Bye.
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 It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.